And that's actually a perfect segue into our first story, which is about this editorial from the Wall Street Journal. And like I said, I'm reading the journal today. And for those that don't know, the Wall Street Journal is owned by Rupert Murdoch, who is a super Zionist and a spook. He got his citizenship from the Reagan administration, working with the intelligence agencies, building satellites, owner of Fox News, New York Post, friend of Netanyahu. And his paper, Wall Street Journal, is like the mouthpiece of the Chamber of Commerce, of the business interest. And there's a very interesting article today in the Wall Street Journal. It's an editorial, and it talks about the mass deportations. And like I said at the top of the show, there has been so much said about mass deportations from a cultural and political lens. When we think about immigration, what we really think about is a cultural social issue. We think about a largely white majority, an increasingly small white majority, that is frustrated with the influx of immigrants who have a different culture, speak a different language, have created this underclass lifestyle where they're dependent on welfare, where they never assimilate, and where they're actually changing the texture of life of most cities in America because of these ethnic enclaves they're creating. They're browning America. And this is how we typically think about it. And so when we think about illegal immigration, we think about issues of society. Should these people stay in our country? Are they contributing? Are they good people? Are they real Americans? What does it mean to be American? Aren't we all immigrants? And what does it mean to be an immigrant? What's the difference between a settler and an economic migrant? These are the types of conversations that we have. And then there's also a political conversation. Well, they're all going to vote Democrat. And the Democrats want to amnesty them because they're a fixture of the Democrat machine politics. And people say the Democrats are the party of the marginalized and the racial and ethnic minorities and so on and so forth. And we've talked about these angles throughout the past year. We've talked about the pushback from the radical left, how they're fighting ICE. We've talked about how the Democrat Party shielded the immigrants. We have talked about how the Democrats are resisting this legislatively, how their allies in the media are putting the pressure on the administration, how Republicans don't like that the issue's in the media because of the midterms. But this is the angle which is actually the most important aspect, and it is also the one that is never talked about. Now, for context, 2 years ago, I predicted that mass deportations would not happen. It's why I didn't vote for Trump. And you can go back, all these shows are on Rumble. You can go back and watch my show from 2024, 2 years ago. And I said explicitly, I said, I will not vote for Trump because the mass deportations are never going to happen. And I knew it for a fact. And I was confident. Why was I confident? How did I know it? Well, I said it back then. It's not just about me. It's about the ironclad logic of these kinds of factors here. The reason why is because 2 years ago I said, during this election in 2024, what is the central determining factor of the success of the Democrats or the Republicans for that matter? It's the economy. How well the incumbent party does in the election is dependent on how good the economy is doing. And what is happening in the economy in 2024? Inflation. Prices are going up. They're going up because of all the money printing. They're going up because of supply chain disruptions. They're going up for a variety of reasons. Inflation is high. That is one of the number one quantitative metrics to predict which party is going to win the election. Now, the Republicans are promising mass deportations. People are saying they're going to win the election because they're promising mass deportations. I said in 24, the reason you're not going to get mass deportations is because if you deport 10 million people, which is how many people came in under Joe Biden, what kind of impact do you think that will have on the economy? Just think about it. 10 million human beings. That is like if all the illegal immigrants in America, which is 30 million people, if all those people were removed, that would be like if Texas broke off from America and suddenly wasn't counted in the GDP, like Texas or Florida. If you deported even 10 million, that would be like if you took Chicago and its entire metropolitan area and you subtracted that from the U.S. economy, its GDP. What would that do to the GDP numbers? What would that do to the rest of the macroeconomic metrics? Well, let's say very simply, in the first place, you remove 10 million people, that is 10 million fewer consumers. That's 10 million fewer people that are spending money on clothes, on food, on gas, on cars, on energy, on rent, on healthcare, on education, all of these things. 10 million fewer consumers. That's a huge hit. Well, what else do these 10 million people do? Many of them work. Many of them have jobs. 10 million people that are being employed under the table for low wages in construction, hospitality, food delivery, all these kinds of things that are now going to have to be replaced. Replaced by native-born workers that are going to want benefits, healthcare, minimum wage. So what does that do to labor cost? It makes it go up. You have a huge disruption. The illegals go out. Oh no, we got to find their replacements. There's a period of adjustment. And when they find their native-born replacements, the labor cost goes up. Cost goes up. You either have to increase prices, hello, inflation, or profits go down. And profits for who? Businesses, Wall Street, the corporations that employ them. Suffice to say, you deport 10 million people, it is going to slow down the economy and it is going to increase prices. Now, you're Donald Trump in the White House. You got elected to get inflation under control. That's why Biden, or ostensibly Kamala Harris, that's why the Democrats lost the election. Because prices were going up, inflation was high, stagflation was setting in. So they get killed politically over this. Trump gets into office. He needs to bring prices down. If you're a politician, this is your imperative. You want to win in 26? You want to win in 28? You got to get the prices down or stabilize them. You got to fix the economy, because if you don't, the bottom falls out from under you. If you don't fix the economy, you get a blue tsunami, and then you get impeached, and then you lose in 28. So these are the ironclad laws of politics. It's the economy, stupid. If you want to win the election, you got to have a good economy. If you want to have a good economy, you got to have growth. You got to have price stability. Inflation has to hit that target of 2%. And in this particular time of persistently high inflation, structural inflation, this is all the more important. Now factor in some other things. What else is Trump promising to do in 2024? He's promising a tariff schedule of 15% tariffs on all goods coming into the country. Now, I'm a tariff supporter, and I don't believe that tariffs are necessarily a direct tax on consumers. However, some of the cost of the tariff is ultimately borne by the consumer. Not all of it, and I think it's worth it, but some of it is. Some of the cost of the tariff is ultimately passed down. So that's already putting upward pressure on prices. Now you're going to deport 10 million people on top of that. Now you're going to deport 10 million consumers, 10 million workers, 10 million people that are employed under the table in some of these very important fields, agriculture, construction, food service, hospitality. I don't think so. Which is Trump going to choose? Deporting 10 million people, which is so politically costly, logistically not feasible for the government, would be unprecedented in terms of the effort required to do it. And it's going to destroy the economy, and they get wiped in the midterms, and they get wiped in 28. Or is Trump going to gesture that he's doing deportations performatively, target the criminals, of which there are only 700,000 criminal illegal aliens, people that are already a drain on society and say that they did mass deportations. And meanwhile, they don't fuck with the illegal immigrants that are actually working. They don't mess with those good illegals that have been here for 20 years that are contributing to society, that are bolstering the profits of Wall Street. Well, now we have our answer. So 2025, they deport 230,000 people. It's nothing. 2026, Trump has changed the policy. He says, well, we're only going after criminal illegals. And specifically, what have they done? They have made carve-outs for the illegals with jobs. When Trump passed the big, beautiful bill last year, him and Stephen Miller and Brooke Rollins at Agriculture were devising a plan to give hundreds of thousands of H-2A visas for illegal immigrants working on farms. It was effectively an amnesty. Go look it up. This was a negotiation. They were talking about taking all these illegal immigrants working in agriculture, Rollins is Secretary of Agriculture, and they were going to grandfather them in and effectively say, well, you're here already. You're working on the farms. We're going to give you a seasonal work visa to work on the farms. And they were going to give this big carve out and shield those people from deportation and effective amnesty. Now in 2026, I hear word from the administration from inside that they are not going to do job site raids for companies with more than 50 employees. When Trump went into a Hyundai factory in Georgia and they deported 300 South Koreans, Trump himself called the governor and apologized and said he wouldn't do it again. They're making carve-outs for illegal aliens. It's not zero tolerance. It's not mass deportations. They're protecting the labor. Well, now here we are, 2026. I'm going to read to you. This is an editorial from the Wall Street Journal. This is a conservative paper of record, Murdoch-owned. This is Rupert Murdoch-owned, allied with the administration, mouthpiece for the business interest. This is what Wall Street Journal has to say. It says, quote, America's strength rests on sustained capital investment, but also on a growing supply of labor. More workers means more production, consumers, and demand. Doesn't that sound great? That, you know, that's what I wake up and am concerned about. I want America to just constantly have more workers, more consumption, more aggregate demand. It's never enough. And if we don't have enough white workers, let's bring in Mexican workers. Oh, not enough Mexican workers or they're too stupid? More Chinese workers, more African workers, more refugees. And we're all going to live together, increasing aggregate demand, buying products forever. You know, then we're going to go to the moon and we're going to go to Mars. Hopefully we can colonize the stars so that we can increase aggregate demand even more. I imagine a scenario where we encounter extraterrestrial life and they can also consume products and contribute to the gross domestic product. We can only hope that we can actually expand, put people on other planetary bodies. There will be more production, consumption, and demand. But anyway, so this is how it starts. It says the Trump administration's mass deportations threaten to break that virtuous cycle. Okay? It's almost beyond parody. Let me read that again. America's strength rests on its growing supply of labor. More workers means more production, consumers, and demand. The Trump administration's mass deportations threaten to break that virtuous circle. Not a vicious cycle of just constantly growing, constantly expanding the economy. No, this is a virtuous cycle of importing foreign workers to increase production and consumption and the GDP. It's a virtuous cycle that is good. It goes on. The U.S. was already slowly approaching zero labor force growth as fertility fell and the population aged. So this is an economic problem, right? People aren't getting married and having kids. And my first concern is, well, you know, who's going to man the factories? Man, when I think about the travesty of men and women being alienated from one another, not pair bonding, not entering the sacrament of marriage and having children. Our society is dying because it's devoid of love and connection and ultimately tradition and holiness. Yeah, but like, so who's going to man the factories? If men and women aren't getting married and having lots of kids and we don't have a ton of kids, I mean, so who's going to make the stuff? Like, who's going to be insurance agents? Who is going to man the gift shops? Who's going to do it? Who's going to make the missiles? Who's going to make the Stinger missiles for Ukraine if we don't have kids? This is a big problem. It says, what kept the country from this demographic disaster was immigration. The 3,000 person per day arrest quota for immigration enforcement looks like an act of economic self-sabotage. In other words, we're not having kids to man the factories. We need immigrants to make up the difference. If you start deporting illegals, we're sabotaging this plan. It says, which is, you know, sort of the point, actually. Research from the Center for Migration Studies finds that the undocumented workforce in the United States is large and overwhelmingly employed across key sectors of the economy. Many of the 675,000 immigrants deported last year, that's a fake number, by the way, were working to build data centers, manufacturing plants, energy infrastructure, and housing. Who will take their place when the U.S. has 6 million unfilled jobs? Who will build the data centers, guys? You thought we were going to deport 30 million illegals, but wait, who's going to build the data centers so that we can have more chat GPT prompts? Who's going to build the houses for all the illegal immigrants without the illegal immigrants? Have you even thought of that? I know everybody was excited about mass deportations. Who's going to build the multifamily housing for all these immigrants if we don't have immigrant labor? Who's going to build the data centers? It goes on. Deportations impose costs on citizens, too. The Peterson Institute for International Economics projected in 2024 that deporting 1.3 million workers could raise consumer prices by 1.5% within 3 years as labor shortages worsen. Deportations lead to the loss of jobs for citizens, according to the Hamilton Project. Consumption declines. The Brookings Institute estimates that the U.S. lost between $40 and $60 billion in consumer spending because of deportations. And that slows economic growth. There it is. I mean, you didn't think of this. Deport 10 million Venezuelans. Think of the hit to the GDP. As a businessman, a taxpayer, and an American with roots in this country that go back 400 years, I want to see us keep growing as we have for the past 250 years. I believe the vast majority of Americans feel the same way. The question we need to ask is, what is the ROI on our investment in ICE, ICE? This is the part that nobody wants to talk about. It is all about the economics. That's really what it is. At the end of the day, why is it that we need to bring in millions and millions and millions of immigrants? Well, you don't even really need to ask this and wonder aloud because it's a testable hypothesis. When did immigration increase the most? 1990. It was the 1990 Immigration Act under George Bush, which basically doubled every category of immigration. Green cards, chain migration, it created H-1B. It created these visa programs, the visa lottery. Everybody knows about the 65 Hart-Celler Act. It was the 1990 Immigration Act, which actually increased the quotas, increased the limit of how many legal immigrants could arrive. And who gave us the 1990 Immigration Act? George Bush, a Republican, President George Bush gave us the 1990 Immigration Act. Chain migration, Republicans. Visa lottery, Republicans. H-1Bs, Republicans. They invented it. And who lobbied for the 1990 Immigration Act? The Chamber of Commerce, of course. The Chamber of Commerce representing the business interests. Because They, on Wall Street, are measuring the macroeconomic trends. They're measuring the collapsing fertility rate. They're measuring the trend in terms of population growth and the future workforce and the size of people which will be beneficiaries of the government, retirees, dependents, as opposed to productive people. And so they lobbied for us to accept more Hispanics, more Asians, to do these jobs that Americans could not do because there's not enough of us, because we're not being born. And this is why then the propaganda was created. There's all sorts of political interest behind it as well, but this is just the narrative that serves as the pretext. America's gonna become a big and welcoming country, and we are a nation of immigrants, and the American dream is for everybody, and the blessings of liberty were secured not just for white men, but for people from anywhere. Why was this mythology created? So that white people would get comfortable with their replacements. White people would get comfortable with the economic migrants pouring in from the countries that still have a high fertility rate, who are going to replace the children that white people never had and we're not going to have. And what is the incentive to bring these people in? It's literally just a math equation. If you're a business and you're making things or selling a service, what's your number one cost? You got to pay rent on your factory, on your farm, or whatever. You got to pay for the land usage. You got to pay for your taxes. You got to pay for your capital, your machinery, your equipment. But probably your biggest cost is your labor. It's the people that are working there. If you're running a farm, it's the people that are picking the grapes, picking the berries. If you're running a hotel, it's the people that are turning over the rooms, turning over the beds and the bathrooms. If you're a construction company, it's the people that are hammering the nails, that are doing the work. So they want immigrants to come over here and work as cheaply as possible. Immigrants that are gonna come here, and because they are not actually citizens, or in some cases they are, but there's another way in which the workers are dependent on their employers, like in the case of H-1Bs, they want people that are gonna come over and, in a word, accept a lower quality of life. Lower wages, becoming an underclass, dependent on government to subsidize their lifestyle with some small wages. And if you could get that cost down with a constantly increasing supply of labor and people that are working basically without regulation, you keep that cost as low as possible, and that means your profits can go up. If the cost goes down, the profits go up. The revenue is fixed. You get the cost down, you get to keep more of what you bring in. It's that simple. And so Wall Street, which buys and sells the companies, and the companies which are becoming conglomerates and highly centralized, well, it is in their economic interest to have this endless supply of labor. As a distinct class, the people that own the businesses, whether they're running the businesses themselves or they just own the stocks or they're the asset managers, they want to keep the supply of labor flowing so that profits go up, so that their assets appreciate in value and they get richer. And those are your billionaires. Those are your billionaire class. That is your billionaire corporate business owning class, which is subsidizing the Republican Party. And at the end of the day, that is the dirty little secret of the GOP. Let me put it to you simply. The Republican Party subsists on donations and funding from the billionaire business class, but they subsist on votes from the middle and working class. That's where they get their votes. They get their votes from states like West Virginia, where they're coal miners, states like Texas, where they're cattle ranchers, states like Indiana, where they used to make things, where they used to be factories, but they get their funding from Wall Street. So how do you reconcile these two positions? Because these are economically at odds with one another. Well, you create someone like Trump. And Trump is going to play up the cultural social angle and even the economic angle for the voters and say, build the wall, deport them all. We speak English, not Spanish. This is countries for Americans, heritage Americans, whatever. Then you get elected and you don't deport the illegals that are actually working. You make a show of it because you need those voters. You deport the criminals. You make these gestures. You convince them somehow that you're doing something that you're not actually doing. And then when you actually go to work as the president, you protect the economic interests of your donors, of the billionaires. And that's the dirty secret of the GOP. Why are you not getting mass deportations? It's not because Stephen Miller didn't figure it out, okay? That's not why. Look, they got $90 billion for ICE. They've got the Immigration and Naturalization Act. They have the jurisdiction. They have the money. They have the authority. They could do it. And they were doing it. When Trump first got in, ICE was accidentally deporting people from their jobs. They were arresting people at the meatpacking plant. They were arresting people at the Hyundai plant. They're arresting people in the Home Depot parking lots. They can do it. They were doing it. Trump told them to stop. He explicitly and specifically told Stephen Miller to stop doing those things. Why? Because he got the call. He got the call from the asset managers. He got the call from the banks. He got the call from Wall Street. They got nervous. They read the news. They saw job site raid, illegal immigrants not showing up to work, afraid of being deported. And these people that watched the news closely to get the edge, trading stocks and speculating, they said, uh-oh, we got a problem. We have persistently high inflation. We have a Federal Reserve chairman that won't bring interest rates down. We have a tariff war and a trade war with China. And now in the middle of all this, our slaves are not going to work because they're afraid that they'll get deported by Trump. So they called Trump up. They called up the Commerce Secretary. They called up all the different people in the cabinet. And they said, shut it down. Our slaves are afraid to go to work. And if we can't get them to go to work, then we got to hire American. And Americans want health care. Americans want a living wage. Americans need to be trained up because they've been excluded from this job market for 30 years because a decision was made that they would be replaced by foreigners because that's cheaper. So Trump called up Stephen Miller and said, we got to stop. We're going to give H-2A visas, H-1A visas to the illegal farm workers. He said, we're not going to deport people from job sites. We're not going to go to a job site with more than 50 workers. We're not going to implement E-Verify. Instead, we're going to have these visible patrols of ICE, right? We're going to have ICE just walking down the street, Border Patrol parading around downtown Chicago so that all these liberals can take their pictures and go on TikTok and Republicans will say, oh boy, the deportations are happening. Look, there they are in uniform parading around the streets. Okay, that's the trick. That's the conceit. They never intended to deport anybody. And this is why. Because you deport 10 million people and GDP is negative. You deport 10 million people and inflation ticks up. Prices are going to go up 2%. So they'll never do it. And you have to understand structurally what is happening. To get elected, Republicans need billions of dollars. Who has the discretionary funds to contribute billions of dollars every 2 years to throw into a sinkhole for an election? The capitalist class, the billionaires. That's who has the money to do it. Ken Griffin, the Bernard Marcus at Home Depot, Uline, one of the other big Republican donors. These are the people that have the money to put up for the Republicans year over year. So the Republicans got to keep the business interest happy in the House, in the Senate, in the White House, in the state races. And so as long as that is the case, you're not going to get your deportations. The economic interest, the capitalist interest is always going to win out. And listen, I'm not a communist, okay? When I say capitalist, I mean the people that own capital. I mean the privately accumulated capital, the people that have billions of dollars in assets. most people have no capital. Most people have a negative net worth. You have credit card debt. You're living paycheck to paycheck. You are not a capitalist because you have no capital. You don't own your home. You don't own your car. You're delinquent on your payments. You're living paycheck to paycheck. You have no savings. You have no stocks. You have no nothing. You are not a capitalist. You are a worker. Okay? Most people are becoming basically indentured servants, in a sense. Everything is as a service. And we are becoming less wealthy. So you need to think in terms of the economics. You can't vote for Trump and say, I hope he's going to do mass deportations for me. Why would he do that? He's going to do mass deportations because you're uncomfortable with diversity? I don't like that my school is all Hispanics. I voted for Trump so he can remove these people. Trump doesn't give a fuck about that. He don't live with them. You think all the immigrants live in Mar-a-Lago? You think the immigrants live in Palm Beach? The immigrants work at Palm Beach. The immigrants don't live in Trump Tower. They don't live in Mar-a-Lago. They work in Trump Tower. They work at Mar-a-Lago. They're delivering Uber Eats and DoorDash in the Trump Tower lobby. Okay? So there's no culture clash for Trump or Tucker or any of these people. It's a culture clash for us because, you know, we have to share the commons with them. So that's the dirty secret of the GOP. You want to know why you are never going to get them? Because the billionaires that fund the GOP employ these people and profit off of them. That's why. It's got nothing to do with anything else. So if anybody tells you otherwise and says, well, you know, I feel like Trump is going to do it. I feel like Trump is our guy and the posters are in control. And look at this press release. Dude, fuck the press releases. People say, look, the Department of Homeland Security X account just posted a meme. That doesn't matter. That's some intern. That guy is getting paid $40,000 a year. Okay? That is some shithead that is getting paid a pittance. And he's all jazzed up. He's texting mommy and daddy. I'm working in the Capitol. I'm working in D.C., that guy has no power. That guy is a nothing. Posters are in control. J.D. Vance is following somebody on Twitter. The DHS account posted a press release. Yeah, that and a dollar will buy you a cup of coffee. I wipe my ass with that. You know what matters? Jamie Dimon has Trump on speed dial. That's what matters. Okay. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, he's got Trump on speed dial. That's what matters. And those people are not nativists, okay? They're not reading V-Dare. They're not nativists that want heritage Americans to preside. Like, what? They don't care about any of that. They're literally building skyscrapers for their bank, which is dependent on the macroeconomic success of the country. That has very little to do with how you feel about the fact they put a Mexican ice cream parlor in your neighborhood, you know? So it is just a flawed way of thinking to think that these people that write Substack articles have more power and more influence over the Trump government than the fucking billionaires that gave Trump hundreds of millions of dollars. You see the problem? You're following some 35-year-old burnout that makes 40 grand a month posting articles on Chronicles and a Substack telling you everything's under control. Trump is listening to us. And you think that guy has more pull over the government than Larry Fink and Jamie Dimon. And that's insane. That's mental illness. So this is why you actually need an insurgent candidate that is truly disruptive. You need someone that is going to take on the billionaires. You need someone that is going to take on the money power. As Spengler wrote, you need a true Caesar-like figure who is going to rally the popular power, the people power, the national power against the money power. Because that's what it is. It's money. Money, you know, it's sort of like medium is the message. It has this inertia all by itself. The market itself has to be stopped by the state. That's what has to happen. Anyway, So that's that Wall Street Journal editorial. Very, very important point to understand for anybody that would place their hopes and dreams and aspirations on the next Republican being based. And did you notice, this is the last thing I'll say, then we'll move on. You know what's really interesting? Have you noticed that all of a sudden, some of the planners at Davos are now saying that maybe we have too many migrants? Have you noticed this? That all of a sudden, Klaus Schwab and Larry Fink and Hillary Clinton, they're now saying maybe we're taking in too many migrants? Why do you think that is? Do you think it's because they got red-pilled? Why do you think the United States is shutting down its borders? Why do you think the United Kingdom is going to try to control regular migration? Is it because they had an epiphany and the people have had enough and they got based? It's because we are just now starting to see technological unemployment. We are just now starting to see the disruption to the labor market caused by AI. Soon, we're going to have a very similar effect with robotics. And what do you think happens when AI and robots start replacing all the white collar and blue collar work? You're going to have a lot of unemployed people. What are you going to do with all of them? Now, all of those producers and workers who are also consumers, as this article says, they're now going to become beneficiaries of the state. They're going to be on UBI. And the more of those people you have, you got a lot of problems. Because these are a lot of people with nothing to do all day, and they're going to need very expensive health care, and they're going to need housing, and they're going to need food and other stuff. So now, all of a sudden, now the central planners say, I think we maybe have too many migrants. Maybe this is a problem. Well, that has everything to do with the macroeconomic trend, which is that pretty soon, maybe we're not going to have a need for labor. There's a question, you know, will there be labor? What kind of labor will there be in an economy where we have an artificial general intelligence? Now, I'm not going to weigh in on whether these predictions are true or whether they're overstated. All I'm saying is the reason what is true is that some of the planners are now expressing doubt, and that's calculated. Hillary Clinton doesn't say a word which isn't choreographed. So it's not like she made an offhand remark. This reflects a changing consensus among these elite circles. And it doesn't have to do with these nativistic sentiments. It has to do with the change in the macroeconomic projections of the people that are paying her speaking fees and buying her book. That's why you're getting that. So it just speaks to the fact that that is what drives everything. And ultimately, that is what we have to get in front of if we want to have real change.